President Trump and the other leaders on key issues such as Iran and climate change. Analysts tell VOA G7 leaders are bracing for an American president known for his sometimes combative stance against allies. Here's Caroline Postel-Vine, a research professor at the Paris-based Institut Sciences Po.
I have been following the G7 summits, G8 summits for some time, and this is really the first time I can actually sense the nervousness.
At last year's G7 in Quebec, President Trump threatened to halt trade relations with several member nations and called his host, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, weak. Brazil's ultra-right president Jair Bolsonaro is accusing his French counterpart of encroaching on his country's sovereignty. This after President Macron said the Amazon wildfires should be at the top of the G7 summit agenda. Bolsonaro responded, his government is open to dialogue, but the French president's suggestion that Amazonian issues be discussed without the participation of the countries of the region evokes a misplaced colonialist mindset. Dr. Doug Morton, a NASA scientist, explains how deforestation has played a role.
This is really the second part of the story that began with our observations of an increase in deforestation. That deforestation only proceeds to someone being able to use those areas for agriculture if those areas are burned.
Thousands of wildfires burning in the Amazon rainforest threaten to wipe out large parts of the ecosystem. I'm Liz Pelka, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
If we don't act now, rather than tomorrow, we cannot help those children to have access to education, which is a fundamental human right.
That's UNICEF's goodwill ambassador on how closure of schools due to attacks and threats are affecting children in Central and West Africa. Details coming up also. Another journalist has been arrested in Tanzania in what government critics are calling a crackdown on media. And cases of rape in Nigeria are on the increase at a very alarming rate. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN Children's Fund reports conflict is robbing nearly 2 million children across 8 countries in West and Central Africa of an education and a viable future. A new UNICEF report warns this will have negative consequences for countries that need an educated workforce to rebuild their shattered economies. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The UN Children's Agency reports schools across West and Central Africa are being deliberately targeted by insurgent groups. It says an upsurge in attacks and threats of violence have forced more than 9,000 schools in the region to close since the end of 2017. UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador Muzun Al-Malayan, who has just returned from a visit to Mali, describes the suffering of the children she met as living in fear of their lives and their futures.
Many schools have been attacked, and which resulted many children out of school, which affects the future of those countries. And if we don't act now, rather than tomorrow, we cannot help those children to have access to education, which is a fundamental human right.
Al-Malayan is passionate about her mission. She is a Syrian refugee who was forced to flee her war-torn country in 2013. She spent several years in a refugee camp. Life in the camp was not easy, but she says she was able to get an education. She says this gave her hope and had a positive impact on her life. She says she wants other children in dire circumstances to have the same opportunities she has had. She tells VOA that children who have no education are vulnerable to abuse, manipulation, and exploitation.
Sometimes they are exploited sexually, or maybe they get married at such a young age. Maybe they will be also in child labor. And most dangerously, when they can go for recruitment by those terrorist groups. So those terrorist groups can exploit them, can use them as child soldiers, and this can destroy their future and their lives.
UNICEF is working with authorities and communities to support alternative learning opportunities. These include community learning centers, radio school programs, and faith-based learning initiatives. The agency has appealed for $221 million to pay for educational, psychosocial support and care for school children and other essential programs in the region. It has received less than 30% of that amount. It is appealing to donors to answer its call for support in providing millions of African children with an education and a future. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Another journalist has been arrested in Tanzania in what government critics are calling a crackdown on media. The arrest of Joseph Gandhi came Thursday after he reported that police allegedly tortured detainees in the central Iringa region. He reports for Watetezi Television, according to the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition, which owns the online channel. The group says Gandhi is accused of publishing false information. Another Tanzanian journalist, Eric Kabandera, was detained less than a month ago and has been charged with organized crime and financial offenses. Reporters Without Borders has called President John Magufuli a press freedom predator and dropped Tanzania 25 places on its annual Press Freedom Index this year. Magufuli has shut down newspapers, banned opposition rallies, switched off live broadcasts of parliamentary sessions, and used the cybercrimes law to jail critics. As terror groups in southern and central Africa commit deadly attacks and pledge allegiance to the Islamic State, experts are trying to determine how big a threat they pose to the region and the wider world. VOA Salem Salamon has the story.
Experts are warning that a focus on alleged Islamist militant ties is hindering efforts to respond to insurgencies in Mozambique and the Democratic Republic of Congo. On April 18, a strike on an army base near the Congo's border with Uganda left several Congolese soldiers dead and others injured. It was the first attack credited to Wilayat Central Africa, previously known as the Allied Democratic Forces, a group that has pledged allegiance to IS. A month later, an IS group took responsibility for attacks in northern Mozambique, part of a growing insurgency in the country led by several groups, including Ahlusuna Wajama and Al-Shabaab.
There's a lot of opacity around this. We don't know exactly who these guys are, but they clearly have an Islamist bent, but they're also in bed with some of the organized crime networks up there. That's how they get some of their revenues, and they may even have some networks across the borders. Borders very porous in that part of Mozambique.
That's Joshua Mazervi, a senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. He says the group shares its name, but there's no known connection with the Somali terrorist organization Al-Shabaab. On July 24, IS released a video featuring a man named Sheikh Abu Abdul Rahman, who called for an end to division and fighting among Muslims in Central Africa. He also called for the creation of a caliphate. The video features heavily armed fighters in a forested area pledging allegiance to IS. But experts are unsure whether links to IS signal a new threat or simply reflect the group's attempt to raise their profile. Ryan O'Farrell, an extremism researcher at Johns Hopkins University, said experts have found virtually no evidence that IS has trained, funded, or equipped its African affiliates.
It also doesn't necessarily fit Islamic State's model. You know, they have affiliates all over the continent, and most of them haven't received training or weapons from Islamic State Central. These, pretty much all of its affiliates are local groups that have local recruitment networks and local financial capacity and local weapons procurement channels. So they affiliate themselves with Islamic State as a brand, but the real tangible connections are quite rarely there.
Nearly daily attacks in the Cabo Delgado region have made the insurgency in Mozambique one of Africa's deadliest. The group in the DRC has pulled off high-profile attacks, killing UN peacekeepers, O'Farrell added.
Their targets are primarily local. It's fairly rarely the MO for some of the more peripheral Islamic State affiliates. But within those zones, so within Beni territory in North Kivu and within Cabo Delgado in northern Mozambique, they're very active.
Yusuf Adam, an associate professor in Maputo, Mozambique, said, rather than receiving arms or provisions from IS, insurgent groups in Mozambique are capturing them from the Mozambican armed forces.
Practically, there are attacks every day. They kill two police persons here, three persons there. They take guns and ammunition and so on. And it seems that they feed themselves, feed their operations from guns they collect.
The insurgency in Mozambique is hard to understand because they have not made any public pronouncements. They are decentralized and likely include former street hawkers with links to organized crime. Jad Devremont, director of the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said the insurgency in Mozambique may have Islamist roots, but other factors fuel it.
This is what I would call an insipid insurgency. That's important, because it means that there are opportunities here in the embryonic stage to address its concerns, snuff it out, and bring back some of these individuals as part of society.
Oil and gas companies hiring locals who might otherwise become frustrated and join the insurgency would help a lot, Devremont said. Adam believes the insurgency cannot be addressed by looking at it internationally. Instead, he urged policymakers to look at the local grievances of northern Mozambique, which has long been cut off from the economic hubs of the country and underserved by the central government.
Violence breeds violence. And in fact, what we need is to start working readily to see what are the problems, what is in the political economy of northern Mozambique.
Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Fifteen past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. At least 130 Nigerian refugees who fled the Boko Haram insurgency in Cameroon have been flown to Yola in Nigeria's Adamawa state. They expressed hope they will find peace after several years of atrocities that made them escape Nigeria. It's the first phase of a voluntary repatriation exercise organized by Cameroon, Nigeria, and the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kenzeka watched as they left and has this report for VOA.
The engine of a Nigerian Air Force flight rumbles at the Marwa Salak International Airport as 133 refugees from 25 families head to the town of Yola. Among them is 31-year-old Alim Bukadia, who says he is anxious to return after 4 years in Cameroon.
We say thank God to Cameroon that helped to keep us in their country. And then today, our country need us, thank Cameroon and HCR that help us.
Bukadia is one of 110,000 Nigerians whom the United Nations says fled to Cameroon from Boko Haram-related violence in Nigeria. He left Cameroon's Minawawa refugee camp that is home to nearly 90,000 people. At least 30,000 additional refugees have been living in villages surrounding the camp. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has not said how many have voluntarily agreed to return. Sadiya Umar Farouk, Nigeria's Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, Disaster Management and Social Development, says the refugees are leaving following a March 2017 tripartite agreement for the voluntary repatriation of Nigerian refugees living in Cameroon. Cameroon, Nigeria and UNHCR signed the deal. Farouk says they have made necessary arrangements for their socioeconomic reinsertion into Nigeria.
We're going to put them in a reception center for a maximum of 7 days, after which they will be taken back to their respective communities. And we're going to support them with skills, with empowerment, so that they can be back on their feet, they can be economically self-reliant.
Midjiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region that shares a border with Nigeria, says many of the refugees want to return, but are reluctant because airlifting them with the animals they have been keeping in Cameroon is difficult.
Many refugees have luggage, have cows, but it's difficult to go back by air. And that's why some of them are still thinking that it is necessary to see way of mean to enable them to go back with all they gather here without any problem.
Midjiyawa Bakari said Cameroon's government will let them go with their livestock by road when they are sure of their security. Last week, Cameroonian authorities warned that Boko Haram may be planning raids that could affect school children and their teachers when the academic year begins on September 3. Officials have begun giving huge consignments of food, money, and equipment to militias on the northern border with Nigeria, defending areas from which the military has withdrawn. The United Nations reports that the 10-year Boko Haram violence has displaced over 2.7 million people, including some 210,000 Nigerian refugees, into neighboring countries. The insurgent group promotes an extreme form of Islamist fundamentalism and opposes Western-style education. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Marwa, Cameroon.
Liberian President George Weah wants to reduce term limits for president, representatives, and senators. Moses Garzo reports from Monrovia.
President George Weah assembled dozens of legislators over the weekend, urged them to cut their years elected officials serve. Weah asked for a constitutional change to reduce the term of the president from 6 years to 5 years. He also wants representatives to serve 5 years instead of six and senators to sit for 7 years instead of nine. Deputy Presidential Press Secretary Smith Tobe says the president intends is to push officials to begin serving the people from the day they assume office. Tobe says often elected officials neglect their duties and only begin actually working at the close of their terms, which he says hamper development.
For example, a senator will perhaps wait for the last 2 years of his 9 years to start to take development to his county. That is not fair in terms of representation. Some lawmakers tend to be complacent. They got 6 years. They could start working in the last 3 years of their administration. That is also not being fair to the electorates. The president, sometimes 6 years, and they start to work maybe in the last 2 years. If you start to work immediately upon your election as of day one, know that you got 5 years, you would have to take some time to play it around. And I think that once that is passed, it gives extra burden and attention to those who will be elected to those positions. They will start to work immediately upon their election.
Some legislators who attended the meeting praised the president for coming out to explain his intent on some of the legislations he wants them to pass. Representative Richard Nagwe-Kun thinks it's the perfect way to understand the laws they are to deliberate on.
We embrace the idea. I would say it was first of its kind since the president took over to have this kind of coordinated and very reconciled retreat, because we all interacted with Vajra things that we're not satisfied with. And I think he looked in that direction to see how best we can work together instead of one group of governments strangling the other branch of government.
Representative Francis Dopo from Rewaji County thinks the best way to solve some of Liberia's major issues is to rewrite the constitution.
Some people could vote for the proposition from the point of anger, from the point of political oppositionness, from the point of political favoritism. You know, so as a lawmaker, I just think that the people view matter. But I can tell you the best thing to do is to rewrite the constitution.
But his colleague Vincent Willie of Grand Bassa County said rewriting the constitution would take time and resources.
Rewriting the constitution is very much germane. It is important. But given the time interval, you cannot rewrite your constitution for just 6 months. You're talking about a whole year. It's a process. It's not even. So I think by changing some of the proposition and making sure that at least the law is relaxed and flexible, the next step will be reviewing or rewriting the entire constitution.
This is not the first time the idea of cutting terms has come up. A constitutional review committee under former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf made similar recommendation after doing a nationwide consultation, but their recommendations went nowhere. We also used the gathering to unveil 25 proposed bills, most of which concerns constitutional amendments. For instance, he is asking for a change to allow Liberians to hold dual citizenship. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
Cases of rape in Nigeria are on the increase at a very alarming rate among women, young girls, and even infants. According to a report by UNICEF in 2015, one in four girls and one in 10 boys in Nigeria had experienced sexual violence before the age of 18. The majority of the cases went unreported in the past, probably because of the stigma society associates with the act. But in the last couple of years, victims of sexual violence have been stepping forward to narrate their ordeals. Reporter Gift Agriga visited the Salama Sexual Assault Referral Center in Gwamana Awan General Hospital in Kaduna State to look at the disturbing trend.
Three survivors who preferred to remain anonymous told VOA about their experiences. They spoke in the Hausa language and Pidgin English. A three-year-old girl who was under the care of her grandmother was allegedly raped twice by a 44-year-old neighbor. The grandmother narrated what happened. She says she was reluctant to report it to the police because she believed she would not get justice, and being a poor widow, no one would believe her. It was on a second attempt that she ran to the Salama Center and received help. The second survivor, in her late 30s, says, she was kidnapped in her home while sleeping with her husband and child. She says her doctors made her walk through the night in thick forests. Later, the three of them took turns raping her every morning and evening until ransom was paid and they freed her. A 10-year-old girl who is the third survivor was reportedly raped by a 29-year-old man who lives in her neighborhood. She says she was lured to a corner by the perpetrator in the pretense that he wanted her to run an errand. The man stuffed her hijab in her mouth and raped her outside their compound. Juliana Joseph is the manager of the Salama Sexual Assault Referral Center. She says 90% of the victims are being sexually abused by people they know.
We've had grandparents raping their biological granddaughters. We've had fathers raping their biological daughters. We've had uncles raping their nieces and their nephews. We have trusted neighbors. You are going out and you entrust your children in the care of your neighbor, and by the time you are back, it is a different story.
A good number of the perpetrators of rape move about freely due to poor investigations. Barrister Zainab Aminu Garuba, chairperson of the International Federation of Women Lawyers, FIDA, in Kaduna, says rape has become an epidemic in the Northwest.
Rape is not just a phenomenon that is only known to be happening to only the women folk. It's happening to men too. Underage boys being defiled, several cases being reported to us. It is very worrisome. It is an epidemic, and I pray and hope that the government will see it as such and will do something very, very fast.
Yakubu Sabo, the police public relations officer in Kaduna State Command, said so many rape cases involving children go uninvestigated because parents want to protect their children from stigmatization.
Some families kill the evidence by sticking to that belief system that don't expose our child to the public that she had been raped, because at later stage she may not get the suitor to marry, or because of stigma attached to her. So this kind of perception or belief dampen the spirit for families to seek redress when their child is involved in cases of rape.
Sabo advised parents to be watchful in their neighborhood and be mindful of who they leave their children with. The Nigerian Criminal Code recommends life imprisonment for rape convicts and 14 years imprisonment for attempted rape. For VOA, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wojtek Zorniak, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Happy Friday and welcome to the sunny side of sports. In medal results Friday at the African Games in Morocco, riders from Namibia and Mauritius won gold medals in the men's and women's cycling mountain bike cross-country marathon events. Namibia's Tristan De Long won his second gold medal at Rabat 2019, covering the 60-kilometer course in 1 hour, 53 minutes, and 11 seconds. Tristan also won a gold medal Wednesday in the 30-kilometer cross-country event. Mary Lecourte de Belot of Mauritius won the other cycling mountain bike gold medal on Friday. She pedaled the 60-kilometer course in 2 hours, 28 minutes, and 43 seconds. In African Games swimming, there were 10 finals on Thursday evening. South African swimmers won 5 gold medals. Egyptian swimmers won 4 gold medals. And the other gold medal in the men's 400 meters individual medley went to the Algerian Ramzi Chuchar, who touched the wall in 4 minutes and 23.53 seconds. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Egyptian swimmer Farida Osman. She set a new African record in the women's 50 meters butterfly with a time of 25.94 seconds. The Egyptians dominated the medal table at the 2015 African Games in Congo Brazzaville, and they're showing strong signs of doing the same in Morocco. With medals still to be awarded on Friday, the Egyptians have 50 medals total, 14 gold, 20 silver, and 16 bronze. South Africa is next with 27 medals, 12 gold, 9 silver, and 6 bronze. And Algeria is third with 30 medals, 10 gold, 8 silver, and 12 bronze. And while the Algerians have more total medals than the South Africans, keep in mind, VOA sports fans, The South Africans are ahead of them on the medal table because they have more gold, which carry more weight. In African Games athletics, the track and field action begins Monday at the Prince Mule Abdallah Stadium in Rabat. Sunday Adeleye is the technical director of the Athletics Federation of Nigeria. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Sunday said Nigerian athletes are healthy and excited about winning medals in Morocco.
Team Nigeria athletics team is ready. We're 100% active. The camp is complete. All the athletes are here. And then, of course, the foreign-based athletes and the home-based, everybody have come back. And without no injury, we are focused. And the athletes are happy and determined to get the event going.
How many athletes and officials did the track and field team travel to Morocco with?
We have a total of 52 athletes and 6 officials.
Is there any special area in the track and field event that you think Team Nigeria will get more medals?
Every event is special to us, and then of course we're taking every event very special, because surprises will definitely spring up, because the level of readiness of our athletes is topmost gear.
Do you have challenges in camp regarding the fitness and preparedness of the athletes?
No, so far so good. The camp is okay. The athletes are okay. We recorded 0 level of injury. That is to tell you that our athletes are all fit and ready for the competition. I mean, as much as we've not encountered or secured any injury so far, and the athletes are in topmost care and ready for the event.
Which country are you expecting a serious opposition from at the games?
Well, when it comes to a game like this, you try to stay focused and then concentrate on your own team. Even as much as you know that Nigeria is also a serious contender when it comes to this level, not even when we have this caliber of athletes that are doing very well in the world. So we leave the concern to other countries. We leave it to them to concern or worry about us, while we stay focused to our business.
Will any of the events serve as a qualifier for the 2020 Olympic Games?
Of course, yes. It's open. The athletes are also taking it as a chance to get their standard or to get qualified for the Olympic Games. So every event matters, and every event we're competing with, the athletes have it behind their mind that, okay, we're going there to use this not just to win the gold medal, but of course we're going there to use it to qualify for those who have not qualified for the World Championship and the 2020 Olympics.
That's Sunday Adeleye, the technical director of the Athletics Federation of Nigeria, and Sunday spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Rabat, Morocco.
Hi, my name is Sunday Adeleye, the technical director of Athletics Federation of Nigeria and the athlete representative on the board of Athletics Federation of Nigeria. I want to say a special shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you very much. Have a lovely day.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Sunday Adeleye mentioned how some of the Nigerian athletes at the African Games in Morocco will try to qualify for the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. Well, 23-year-old Gabriella DeBoo Stafford is hoping to represent Canada at her second Olympics next year in Japan. Gabriella made her Olympic debut at the 2016 Olympics in Brazil, where she competed in the women's 1500 meters event. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with the Canadian athlete at the recent Muller Grand Prix meet in Birmingham, England. Here's Andy.
Well, Gabriella, you've been having a great season. Canadian record, a mile 1500, well, combined. Second today in Birmingham. But of course, there's interest in that you're an Anglo-Canadian combination, yeah. In terms of now you're being coached by Andy Young, who guides the career of a certain Laura Muir.
Yes.
How's that been feeling? Because as I understand it, you're based in Glasgow now. So how's that working out?
It's going really well. I'm so grateful for the opportunity that Andy, Laura, and Gemma have afforded to me. And, you know, to work with the best in the world is such a blessing and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And it's been a challenge, of course, but it's mostly been going very well. And my husband is also British, and so we've been able to make that move together. And so to have somebody like a partner doing this move with me makes it really exciting and a very smooth transition. So,
how did it come about? I mean, was it kismet, fate, or did did Andy Young approach you? You approach Andy Young, or was Laura the intermediary?
Yeah, so we knew our connection was we're part of the same sports agency. So actually at Birmingham last year, I was introduced to Andy through my agent, Dan Lee. And so, yeah, that's how we met. So we met a year ago at this meet.
Is the training you do with them now markedly different to what you used to do?
There are some big differences. I come from a background of kind of lower volume, higher intensity and quality. My old coach, Terry Rodchenko in Toronto, that was his approach. So it wasn't like a drastically different in terms of coming from a really high volume, lots of tempos and threshold stuff to a program with a lot more intensity or vice versa. So that was good in terms of similarity. But yeah, there are some big differences, of course, just the intensity of the work. I think going from a collegiate to a pro program, and then obviously just trying to keep up with one of the best athletes in the world right now, you know, it's going to be a lot faster. So, yeah.
I mean, obviously, you're an established international, but yes, Laura Muir is, it's fair to say, no slouch.
Yeah, so, yes.
But do you have to be careful that training, well, in a way, there's an element of competition in training, but not to do your best racing in trying to stay with her?
Yeah. I think that you can surprise yourself by how hard you can push in training, so long as you're doing the appropriate things to recover from it, like sleeping a lot, eating well, you know, that type of stuff. So I think just trying to keep up with Laura as much as I can. You know, there's workouts where I can't keep up with her, but that's fine. It's just about showing up every day and giving it 100%, giving it your best. So
and presumably, of course, this is World Championship year, Doha, but Olympics, Tokyo next year. I mean, this is a partnership you're expecting to continue for quite some time?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Well, Gabriella, well done. Second place in Birmingham, but also on this somewhat resurgence in running for you in the Anglo-Canadian combination. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your interview.
That's Canadian athlete Gabriella DeBoos Stafford. And she was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards at the recent Muller Grand Prix meet in Birmingham, England. And this fun fact about Gabriella, her father, James, was also a runner, and he competed for Canada at 4 World Cross Country Championships. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's take a break now for these VOA programming announcements.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
I'm Kendra Harrison. I'm the 100 hurdle world record holder for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa program. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African football news, Liberia has appointed Peter Butler as the new head coach of the national team, nicknamed the Lone Star. The 52-year-old British coach previously was in charge of Botswana between 2014 and 2017. In an interview with Moses Garziawu, Coach Butler talked about what he hopes to accomplish with Liberia.
I have a great deal of experience, worked in Africa for 3.5 years, took Botswana to 86 in the FIFA rankings with little or no money, and brought the average age down to 23. So I think the most important thing from my point of view is to identify, recruit a young squad, a new young squad, bring in some experienced players who can actually support those players and get some results and make progress down the road. I'm obviously very positive and looking forward to the challenge.
The Liberian FDC have amended for the year and probably building up to qualifying the nation to Qatar 2022 in the preceding Nations Cup. Are you up to that level?
I think the most important thing is that it's a year's challenge. You can achieve a lot in a year. You can learn a lot in a year. You can learn a lot whether you're good enough or you're not good enough. And I think the most important thing is that if we all work together, we'll go somewhere down the road to actually achieving our hopes and dreams. And I think you have to be realistic. It won't be easy. It's going to be tough. It's only a year's contract. I mean, we'll assess it after 6 months. I had other opportunities to go elsewhere. I can assure you this is not a money move, far from it. This is about taking on a challenge where it appealed to me back in national team football and working with some very, very talented young players.
How difficult was it making a decision? Did you have something that influenced you most in terms of coming to Liberia?
Not really, no. I've obviously heard a lot about, read a lot about Liberia, you know, obviously for the right reasons, the wrong reasons, and I think the most important thing is never judge a book by its cover. It's, you know, come and see the place and meet the people first. I've found the people so far fantastic, very friendly, very hospitable. But like I said, I'm not here on holiday. I'm not here for the money. I'm here to actually help develop a new team and get some results moving forward in the future.
Does George Weah have some influence on your decision? He's president of Liberia, former Ballon d'Or winner.
His Excellency George Weah, who was a wonderful footballer, and I think he, you know, to come and to work in an environment where he's the president of the country, is an honour in itself, and hopefully I'll meet him somewhere down the road and we can talk football. But to represent Liberia is an honour, and I'm very thankful for giving the opportunity.
What kind of players are you hoping to work with the Liberia national team?
I know they're a talented football team. They want to play football. They want to play possession-based football, but it needs to have an attacking slant on it. It's all right having possession and going nowhere. You need to play with the tempo. You need to get bodies forward, and you need energy in the team, and that's what we'll be looking to bring in, players with youthful energy, and more importantly, you know, with a steely resolve about the group. I do believe that there's a talent there. It just needs nurturing, and hopefully, you know, we'll have the time to actually put together a squad which you can actually challenge and realise those results.
That's Peter Butler, the new head coach of Liberia's national football team, the Lone Star. And Coach Butler spoke with Moses Garziawu in Liberia's capital, Monrovia. Joining us now with more football news from Africa is Samson Omale. Sporty greetings, Samson.
Sporty greetings to you, Sonny. South Africa Football Association, SAFA, will this weekend launch the first Women's National Football League in Southern Africa, but there is no clarity on prize money for the champions and monthly grants. The historic Women's National League will see 12 teams across the country compete in a round-robin system. SAFA President Danny Jordan confirmed none of the matches will be televised for now, but said the association is engaging a number of broadcasters.
We have to strengthen the clubs now. The clubs are basically clubs from grassroots football, amateur clubs, and a whole range of measures must be taken to strengthen those clubs to be able to compete at a national level.
According to SAFA Vice President Ria Ledwaba, all the 12 teams will be assisted financially throughout the season.
With or without a sponsor, we are establishing this league. And when it is established, we'll work around the clock to make sure that this league is sustainable.
And now to Kenya, where Football Kenya Federation President Nick Madwawa has defended the latest decision to appoint Francis Kimanzi as the head coach of the national team, Harambee Stars. FKF President maintains it was the right time to bring in a local coach for the national team following the exit of Sebastian McNee.
We have thought about it, discussed with him, and we think that he's best placed now in Kenyan history to drive this team forward after his experience being with the national team.
For his part, the newly appointed coach, Francis Kimanzi, says he will be seeking to build on the foundation left by departed Frenchman Sebastian McNee.
It's difficult sometimes to satisfy everyone around the beautiful game, but we'll try. We'll try most of the time, you know, in selection, in monitoring and guiding the players. We'll try our level best, but I can tell you it will never be easy.
And on a rather sad note, former Ghana international Junior Agogo has passed away at the age of 40. The former Nottingham Forest player has been battling stroke since 2015 after he retired from football. He had won 26 caps for Ghana and was a country star at the 2008 African Cup of Nations. Here's how some fans reacted to the news of the death of the Ghanaian former football star.
And he was one of the players who was very strong.
He's the only Black Stars player I have a crush on.
He was a fantastic player.
Girls were crazy about him.
I learned he's JJ's nephew.
I had a crush on him.
He's very strong and can take on the defenders.
Anytime he came onto the pitch, the girls were all excited.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. Junior Agogo sealed his place in the hearts of Ghana football fans with his performance at the 2008 Africa Cup of Nations tournament, which Ghana hosted. Junior scored 3 goals, including a late winner in the quarterfinals that lifted Ghana to a 2-1 victory over Nigeria. Former Black Stars midfielder Laria Kingston says, and I quote, "I think that was the goal that sealed his popularity in Ghana. During the tournament, we could feel Junior's influence in the team grow and his popularity go up, but that goal sealed everything." Meanwhile, Junior Agogo's former English clubs paid tribute on social media. First, Nottingham Forest. Rest in peace, Junior. Nottingham Forest Football Club is saddened to learn that former striker Junior Agogo has passed away. The thoughts of everyone at the club are with Junior's family and friends at this sad time. Bristol Rovers Football Club had this to say: rest in peace, Junior Agogo, a gas legend, scoring 41 goals in 126 appearances. Our thoughts are with his family and friends at this time. Sheffield Wednesday and Barnet FC also express condolences over the death of Junior Agogo. Now let's go to Mongolia, which traditionally celebrates archery, wrestling, and horse racing during its Nadam Festival. The horse racing is proving controversial as we hear now from my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson.
Mongolia's most famous horse festival is a celebrated event across the country. But in the background, rights groups are very concerned. More than 10,000 children participate in nearly 400 races in Mongolia. Each year, an average of 600 child jockeys are thrown from their horse, and in 2017, 169 were killed. Growing up on the edge of the Gobi Desert in a nomadic family, Namun must work as a jockey riding in Mongolia's biggest horse racing event, the Nadam.
When I was five, I started to ride horses, and I have been racing now for 4 years. My father trains the horses, and I am the jockey to race them.
Mongolian courts have banned child riders from racing in winter and spring races in response to the high numbers of deaths and injuries recorded each year. But most horse racing families continue to swing child jockeys back up into the saddle, despite new regulations introduced 3 years ago.
When the kids are jockeys, it is good for their health, their exercise. It is a national tradition. Namun didn't have any accidents so far, but when she races, I always worry.
Rights groups have slammed horse trainers for putting children's lives even more at risk. Retired events organizers are worried the traditional Nadam festival is now turning into a business, pushing horses and child jockeys to the limits. Segmit Sambiar trains horses.
I've trained racing horses since the 1970s. We used to start early with preparation, giving them extra feed to make them strong. Now the rules aren't strict and everything is becoming easier and about the prize money.
With regulations poorly enforced and perpetrators of child fatalities rarely punished, the fate of improving horse racing standards in Mongolia are slim. Namun says she will continue racing to make her family happy.
My family is so glad when I race, especially my brother. When I win, my brother is so glad and proud of me.
And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that report. And that wraps up the August 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Peter Clottey, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is Science in a Minute.
Sleep deprivation has long been linked with having a higher risk for cardiovascular disease and even death from coronary heart disease. A study published in the journal Psychosomatic Medicine suggests one possible reason is that having a bad night of sleep can cause blood pressure to spike. The researchers studied 300 men and women between the ages of 21 and 70 with no history of heart problems. The participants wore portable blood pressure cuffs and had their blood pressure randomly measured over a two-day, two-night period. To gauge their sleep efficiency, they also wore devices that measured movement as they slept. The researchers found that the participants with lower sleep efficiency readings also showed an increase in blood pressure during the night and a higher systolic or upper number blood pressure the following day. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show. I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it, yeah. Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the continent has seen a decline in the number of authoritarian regimes since the 80s, but still, the number of democracies has not increased significantly. A report card on democracy on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm David Berg. President Donald Trump says he is ordering U.S. companies to look for ways to close their operations in China and make more of their products in the United States. As AP's Sagar Meghani reports, the statement is the latest salvo in the trade war between the world's two largest economies.
The president says he hereby orders U.S. companies with operations in China to start looking for alternatives, though it's unclear whether he has that authority. After vowing a response this morning to China's tariff decision, he's been meeting with trade advisors hours before flying to France for the G7 summit. One of those involved said an option being discussed is putting a 25% tariff on all Chinese exports to America. Markets here in Asia.